Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Gosh, that was a fascinating story that Andrew Pearce told. And like I said, familiar to so many people. And a reminder that his book is out now. It's called Finding Margaret. Now, time for the final installment in our short series featuring the six ancient royal sites of Ireland. So we're heading to Connacht for the first time, to County Roscommon and the prehistoric mound of Rathcrohan. And we end at the Curragh, at the ceremonial site, Dun-Áilleanna. And to discuss the myths and legends galore, I'm joined again by Anthony Murphy, author and curator of Mythical Ireland. Anthony, lovely to have you back.
Great to be back.
With us. So Rathcrohan has a significant place in our folklore. What makes it so special, Anthony?
Well, I suppose it's one of the royal sites. Mythologically, it's very important. It's actually listed, believe it or not, in our medieval documents as one of the principal cemeteries of ancient Ireland and one of the principal éinigí or assembly sites, along with Tailtean or Telltown in County Meath and Aonach in Broga, which would be the Aonach of Brú na Bóinne. So it's right up there. Archaeologically, it's fascinating because the archaeology sort of mimics that. In a very small space, 6.5 square kilometres, there's 240 monuments and archaeological features spanning all the way from the Neolithic into late medieval times.
So when you say assembly site, assembly for what? What does that mean?
Well, the traditions of the assembly sites are best known from Telltown, where we had basically what was the Irish Olympic Games. And the claim about Telltown is that those games were older than the Greek Olympic Games. But that would have been a huge gathering, seasonal gatherings, usually at Lunasa, sometimes at Samhain, where there'd be everything from political overtures, the setting of and making of laws, the settlement of disputes, but then
Fellas taking lumps out of each other.
Well, horse racing and warrior contests and all that sort of stuff as well. And probably a little bit of trade and a bit of feasting as well.
OK, so all sorts of reasons to meet and to gather. So the great cattle raid of Cooley, this is the place where it went down, is it?
Well, this is, yes. Queen Maeve, of course, is the famous, the probably the most famous person attached to Rathcrohan. And so scholars think that, you know, because most the Irish sovereigns, as it were, the kings, they were all male. There never really was a queen. So they think that actually she was the queen of the land to whom the king had to be married. You know, this representation of the land that we see in so many places like at Tara and Ishnach, etc. But what began the cattle raid of Cooley was a pillow talk between Queen Maeve and the last of her four husbands, Ailill. And my advice to the gentlemen listening is if your wife, at night, if there's pillow talk going on and your wife says something, just say, "You're right, darling," and turn off the light and go to sleep.
And what did she say that caused
Well, she said, "I have the finest of everything." And she boasted about having the best bull in all of Ireland, the Finn Bennock, the white horned. And Ailill, instead of saying, "You're right, darling," said, "Actually, I hear there's an even better bull, the Dun Cuilinge over in County Louth, you know." And she decided she was going to get it. She sent emissaries. They made it known to the bull's owners that she wanted it and that if it wasn't given, she'd take it by force. And this is what led to an entire war.
Right. So that's where it all started.
Yes.
And it finished in an awful uproarious battle.
Which didn't go too well for either her or the Ulstermen, in fairness, the Connacht armies. And of course, that is Toinbow Cuilinge, probably our best known saga, our best known epic tale, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what happened then and how did the Cooley raid eventually play out?
Well, of course, Cuchulainn is the great hero of the Ulster warriors. They suffer from a wasting sickness and he has to defend Ulster alone. And he's lopping off heads by the dozen, you know. His feats are well known. Actually, the conclusion of the Táin is interesting because it's a battle between the bulls in which Dun Cuilinge actually gores and dismembers the Finn Bennock and drops parts of its body around Ireland, forming new landscape features. And this has hints of very ancient creation mythology. It seems that Toinbow Cuilinge and Queen Maeve's role in it are all part of an older a stratum, as it were, of tales that goes all the way back into prehistory.
All right, a gory history as well.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
The way you tell it. So if we go to Rathcrohan, what are we likely to see? Or do you need to have an aerial view? Because you mentioned the site being 6.5 kilometres.
Well, there is a very good visitor centre there. The landscape is mostly farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the wonderful thing about Rathcrohan is there's this project, which is a European innovation project, which is farming Rathcrohan. And the aims of that were to both preserve and try to enhance the archaeological landscape, while at the same time, as it were, enhancing the fortunes of the farmers, because 90% or so of all of the Irish monuments, of course, are located on private farmland. A project, I understand, has been very successful. It has also included an element of environmental element and reducing emissions. But if you were to go there, yeah, like a lot of these royal sites, the Hill of Tara, for instance, is a great example. And Uisnech, there isn't a wild lot to see on the ground at Uisnech, which is why you should always take one of the guided tours there.
To make sense of it all. And the same with Rathcrohan, I'm sure the visitor centre will put it all
absolutely
together for you.
So but you do get the impression of a landscape that is better seen from the air.
Okay, Dún Eolainn then on the Curragh, another of our royal sites. What can you tell us about this one?
Yeah, and this is a good one because it's probably the least known. It's on private land again. It's actually only opened to the public once a year. It is Cnoc Eolainn. It is said to have been an early site of the Leinster kings. But the difficulty with Dún Eolainn is it doesn't have a list of kings, as it were. It doesn't have that tradition. Archaeologists who've been examining the remnants on that hill, by the way, the hill is crowned by an enclosure, a henge form enclosure, which is probably the largest on the entire island. It's a half a kilometre in width. It's nearly 500 metres
in width. What is that?
It's like a giant circle of earth and stone with a ditch on the inside. Archaeologists would term these as ceremonial enclosures.
Mm-hmm.
And further excavations taken place in the 60s and 70s by Bernard Wales, who I think was from Pennsylvania University, revealed some Iron Age structures in the interior of that. But the conclusion that they reached was this is highly likely, unlikely to have been a habitation site. They can't actually imagine that kings lived there, but rather that ceremonies were held there. And let's be honest, it's on a hilltop in Ireland. Those ceremonies are highly likely to have taken place in the summer, because in the winter you'd be blown out of it and you'd be soaking wet.
Right, but they weren't living there. They're pretty sure that
they don't think so. But again, archaeological investigation of Dún Eolainn, as at some of the other royal sites, continues, and there may be more to be revealed.
All right, and Anthony, if anything is revealed, you'll come back and you'll tell us about it, I'm sure.
Oh, I certainly will.
Thank you very much. That's Anthony Murphy, who's an author and curator of Mythical Ireland. We'll be back with our expert on wills and inheritance after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.